There's many positives Ireland can take from the performances of several countries at the World Cup, Costa Rica being the prime example. Roy Keane takes the assistant manager job at Aston Villa, while it's so far so good for the League of Ireland clubs in European action. This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. Check out the Freak FM Facebook page and at FRQ on Twitter. We're going to have our League of Ireland goalmouth section shortly. I'll be speaking to Cork City's new signing John O'Flynn, and Peter Staunton of Goal Ireland will fill us in on all the gossip in the league. I'm delighted to be joined first, though, by Extra Time's Pete Kelly. Let's start with Roy Keane, Pete, new assistant manager at Aston Villa. What do you make of the decision? Good for Roy, good for Villa, good for Ireland?
I think, you know, if it's managed with a bit of common sense, I think it'd be good all around, you know. I think that Keane has always shown himself to be a bit of a kind of a hyperactive type of personality, whether when it was on the pitch, as a player on the sideline getting frustrated as a manager, you know, when he was at Sunderland and Ipswich and places like that. I don't know if there's enough in it for him to be just the assistant manager of the international team. So I think he needs the day-to-day interaction with players, not to keep himself, on the straight and narrow. So I think it could be a good thing, as there's, you know, there's good boundaries drawn up at the start. And I think Martin O'Neill would be very, very good at that. And the reality is, it'll be down to Martin O'Neill as to how or if that's going to work. And I think, hopefully it will. I think it will.
Roy said that he had spoken to the FAI, he had spoken to Martin O'Neill and Aston Villa before any type of agreement was put in place. And does that just show his commitment to this Irish team? When he took the assistant manager job under Martin, he wanted to get a job done. And it was one of his one of the reasons, probably, Pete, that he is at Villa and not at the main manager job at Celtic.
Yeah, and I think what it does show is a new level of maturity for Keane, you know, which he's a relatively young guy. And so I think that he will probably has been chastened a bit by his experiences in the hot seat at Sunderland and at Ipswich. And also, you know, I think that past experiences with Ireland, the whole Saipan thing, which, you know, every now and again it's going to raise his head, you know, when somebody doesn't have anything better to write about. So I think he's learned a lot from that. You know, he's always going to divide opinion because, you know, the love-hate thing that Roy managed to bring to it. There's no doubt about it, though. He understands the game. He was a great player. And I think he really does show that he is committed to the Irish thing. But he just needs more to do, I think, you know.
What about the point about him not getting to as many games as he probably would have been able to see if he didn't have the Villa job? He's going to be tied down to the one club now throughout the Premier League season. Of course, there's an Irish coming through at Villa, and the teams they play, he'll obviously get to see the Irish players. But first and foremost, he's going to be, you know, dedicated to Villa. Is there a little bit of a problem there? We always wanted our manager and our assistant manager going to as many games as possible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I to be honest with you, I think the whole notion of you know, seeing the guys playing every day of the week is a bit overstated. I know that Martin O'Neill has said, you know, he's got Guppy and Walford on he can use them as scouts. You know, I remember back in the day we used Terry Conroy as a scout in England for years, and half the people in Ireland didn't even know that he was still alive, never mind being used as a scout on a regular basis, going back to the Johnny Giles era and on with Owen Hand and McCarthy and that. So I think it'll be overstated. I think the media or some sections of it at times used the not going to matches thing as a bat to beat the likes of Trapattoni and Tardelli over the head with. So I think it was overstated. If the guy is doing very, very well, you don't have to see him playing every week. You know, there's a lot of video footage available, and I know there's nothing beats seeing them in the raw, but I think they'll get to see as many players as they need to see. I don't think there's going to be anybody hidden that they haven't seen because they haven't been at every single match. You know?
Is there a little bit of unfair criticism, Pete, towards Roy's decision to take this? I know a few of the media pundits have said he won't be able to do the two jobs and all, but if we look at history, we've had the likes of Chris Hughton, who was double-jobbing it with Ireland under Brian Kerr and Tottenham Hotspur. Kevin MacDonald under Stan, and he was the Villa assistant coach as well. This isn't a raw thing. This is quite common.
It is, of course, and you know, there's an old adage, you know, used in business as well as everything else. You know, if you want something done, get me a busy person to do it, because the guy with plenty of time in his hands never seems to get around. And I think that there's a lot in that, and if you have a character like who likes to be on the go all the time, I don't see that's any big deal. You know, I think it can be done. You know, I remember it, an interview in the not too distant past with Martin O'Neill. Is a very similar type of character. And he had gone away from the game for a while because his wife was ill. And once she came out the other side of it in good health, he kind of said the first thing she said to him was like, you know, get the hell out of the house, because if you stay here, probably you're going to drive me nuts.
I'd say so, I wouldn't be surprised if Roy Keane's wife is very similar.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that there's a lot in that. There are always going to be some sections in the media that are going to use any possible, you know, chink in the armor to leverage something about Roy Keane. And you know, I would have, you know, various opinions of Roy. I've always thought he was a great player. I think he's a huge amount to offer. I always thought he was completely wrong in Saipan. But then again, I wouldn't write him off for the rest of my life, you know?
Absolutely. In terms of positives from an Irish point of view of Roy taking this job, there is, as of course, Irish players coming through the ranks at Villa, and Jack Grealish, one of the players, in fact, that Roy was asked about, and Roy made the point that he won't be too heavy-handed on Jack. You know, he'll approach it in the right way, and he'll talk to Jack about the Irish team and, you know, that kind of thing, and keep him, you know, in the loop and that sort of thing. It's a huge positive for someone like Jack Grealish coming in, and for Irish media and Irish fans that are looking to see Jack make that big step, because we really identify a raw talent there.
Yeah, I think, you know, Grealish is certainly has tremendous potential. You know, I'd hate to see him being built up too much and then end up getting knocked down. You know, we've had a couple of, you know, real prodigies in the past, and, you know, very few of them have made it all the way through. In fact, Keane himself was probably one of the guys that at youth level was regarded as, you know, had a really big chance. And then previous to that, it was probably Liam Brady was that the previous, you know, boy hero that we thought was going to be great, and had made it through. And there's been so many guys that have almost made it, like young Clifford at Chelsea. You know, he was regarded as the next Maradona almost.
We've learned a few lessons from our expectations, I think, on that one, Pete.
And he's vanished into oblivion because for a whole slew of reasons. So I think that will benefit greatly. The one guy I think could benefit more than all is Kieran Clark, and I also think that he's more important to Ireland in the very short term, because we're going to need somebody in the centre of the defence going forward, and he's a young guy and he can play left or he can play, you know, in central position. And I think we need to see him step up to the bar very quickly, and I think he's got the potential to do it, and maybe Keane could be a big help to him there.
Kieran Clark, yes, certainly. I didn't even think of that one, Pete. A player that is certainly going to be huge for Ireland, as you said, that centre-back role, and of course his diversity of being able to move about a bit will certainly help us. Just a final point before I leave the Roy Keane chat. For Roy himself, taking another assistant manager job, is he somewhat rebooting his management career by doing this?
I'm sure he is. I mean, you see, I think it's always going to be a big next big challenge for him and that type of stuff. So, you know, where he goes from here, you know, who knows? I mean, I think he's shown by turning down the Celtic job that, you know, that was a lose-lose situation. And I'm glad that he was that he was smart enough to realise that. He could not have won there. To win in the managerial stakes probably means a Premier club or a top Championship club, while continuing with Ireland and growing, his experience, with probably a view to taking over from Martin O'Neill if everything runs smooth, you know, in several years' time. Because Martin O'Neill is a young man. I think he's about 61 or something. He isn't going anywhere. You know, and you saw, if you look at the age profile of a lot of the managers in the World Cup, there's no kids in there managing teams.
No, it's a fair point indeed. And speaking of the World Cup, Pete, a lot of commentators have made the point that Ireland can take confidence out of the performances of some teams. The likes of Costa Rica, they had their own Italia 90, particularly in the second round when they hit five terrific penalties. It was really remarkable. Algeria, another team that have had a great World Cup. Is it fair to say that when these teams organise themselves and they get themselves in the right shape, formation, and actually just go for it and play a bit of football, this is something that we should be trying to reflect as well?
Yeah, I think so. The first thing I think that we have to take from it is you're always better to be there. You know, every now and again, I would hear somebody, actually, we weren't good enough and sure, probably wouldn't have been any good for us to get out there, which is a load of cobblers, to be honest with you. Anytime you can get to it, you get out there. We've gone to the three championships. We've got out of the group on each occasion, and it's always been good for us, always. And, you know, like the Greeks didn't play a whole pile of football, but they were out there and they were competitive. Algeria, you kind of resembled a lot of Big Jack's sort of style in the old days, in that, you know, when you had the ball, you had to beat 11 guys to put a ball in the net. You know, so they had everybody back behind the ball. But then when they had the ball, they were able to play as well. So I think that's the kind of combination thing. There's been very few swashbuckling sides, but overall, it's been a fantastic World Cup and great, you know, us for Ireland from this. If we were out there, we would have been competitive, even given that we, you know, we're not at our best at the moment.
Indeed. What about, you mentioned Greece there, Pete, and I was just thinking, it's one of the teams, your comment about you're always better to be there, and people said, oh, we would be trounced if, a lot of people said we would be trounced if we were there, but in terms of the likes of the Greeks, they're always qualifying for these tournaments. What is it that they're doing that we're not?
I haven't a clue. I mean, to be honest with you, there's a little bit of having a look in the draw as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the group stages, like, you know, maybe that the top seeded nation in their group, and I can't, like, I'm only just speculating here, I don't know what groups they were in off the top of my head, weren't like the Germanys and the Hollands that we always seem to manage to attract like a magnet. And so it's, I don't know, but I mean, I think they're nearly impossible to beat at home. Quite regularly in their groups, they've had teams from the same neck of the woods around the, you know, down the Balkans and the area and the southern Mediterranean. So, I think they've probably been lucky to get out. They are a decent side, but nearly impossible to play against.
They close out games, though, Pete, don't they? I mean, they try to... It's Trapattoni-esque type style, and you know they keep the games as low scoring as possible, and probably try to nick one or two, and you know that has worked for them. It got us to the Euros, it's probably fair to say, and nearly got us to the previous World Cup. But is that style going out the window soon? I mean, obviously, clearly not if they're still getting to these tournaments.
No, well, you see, I think they look at the players they have and they do the best they can with them. So it's almost like there's no point in going out and saying, well, we're going to play like, I don't know, like Argentina have played in here, if we don't have the players who can do it. And Argentina didn't have a Messi in there, would they be playing that way? You know, it was like when Barcelona were at their height. Everybody said, well, that's the way every team should play. But every team can't play like Barcelona.
Yeah, because you need that final key that's going to unlock the door, as they say. A point about Russia, Pete, because they're another side that have always qualified for the big tournaments, or, well, the majority of time they will qualify, but they're quite disappointing when they get to the big stage. I mean, we were blitzed by Russia in the qualifiers for the Euros. I mean, I thought they were a real tic-tac, straightforward, quick passing, quick movement, and, you know, really good team. I think they were very, very comfortable in that group we were in. But when they get to the major tournaments, they just seem to disappoint.
Yeah, I think there must have been, it seemed to me, and I watched them playing, that there was a fear of losing almost, and they weren't coming out, because they've always been technically skilled, the Russian team. And you know, they had a bit of work to do after, you know, the sort of the old USSR broke up, because the vast majority of the really good teams that the USSR had were actually Ukrainian guys. So they had a bit of work to do, but they have, you know, they have a huge playing population. They have a lot of technique, very good players. Maybe Capello didn't allow them to play. I don't know. He'll get the blame anyway. So I think they had a fear of losing. The teams out here that have excited, their Colombias and the Costa Ricans and these guys, they've gone out with no fear whatsoever of losing. So they've just gone and played, you know. And so I think, and that's the thing as well that the Americans have done. They've kind of gone out to play. They've been very well organized, but they've given it a lash in their own, you know, in their own style. And I think that's one of the great things that Klinsmann has done with the Americans, has made them very hard to beat, but in a very up-tempo type of style, you know.
A lot of people, what you just said, this fear of losing, Pete, was reflected in Ireland's performances, say, at the Euros, when you could see by the individual players they weren't able to get on the ball, and it was a case where there was maybe too much too much tactics running through their heads. Maybe is it fair to say you might need those tactics for the qualifiers to get you through, and then when you're in the major tournaments, you just have to remove the shackles and just kind of go for it?
Yeah, I think so, but I also think you need all your players to be fit all the time on the pitch. And, you know, and in the Euros, I think what we had was Shea Given was definitely not fit to play, even though he had been fantastic. Maybe there's a bit of, he was responsible a bit himself. He should have maybe taken himself out of the picture. Richard Dunn was carrying maybe a succession of injuries, so he wasn't at the best he was at. And like, he's been the talisman for us. You know, he was like, previous to him, it was McGrath. Presents this rock solid wall, and it just didn't work for him. And I think the sort of the confidence of the other players was dented a bit by that. Whereas, you know, the teams that, you know, the less vaunted teams who have done well out there, the one thing you see is they're together. They're fighting for each other. The Dutch actually is the first time I've seen the Dutch in a long, long time where they all seem to be on the same page.
Absolutely. A lot of people will agree with you there. They're a little bit like the French in that regard. I mean, there's always seemed to be in camp fighting and rows and that kind of thing.
And Deschamps seems to have got over that. He seems to have done a good job with the French too.
He has as well. A young team, and it was almost like the experience, the lack of experience is one of the reasons why they didn't get through. A couple of other countries that maybe Ireland can look at and think, well, whew, are we a bit away from them? The likes of Bosnia, Jim Beglin described them as a team of technicians, and I wouldn't like to get them coming up in any type of qualifier group in the next few years.
Yeah, I think they're fragile enough, though. I mean, I don't think they've got the, you know, they're handy enough, but I don't think, say, for instance, they're as good as Croatia. And I think it's a population thing. They just don't have enough players. But if you look at the Serbs, the Croats, the Bosnians now, they're all former Yugoslav republics. When the Yugoslavia was one country a few years back, all of those guys were playing for the same team, the guys from that same. So, and they were always one of the top teams. So it just shouldn't come as any surprise that they will be very, very strong. I think the Bosnians are maybe not as good as, they're probably maybe not as good as we think. But, we can match any of these guys on any given day. And if we get a bit of luck and if we make some of our own luck by being hard to beat, and use the talented players we have in the last third, but be rock solid in the middle of the pitch and things like that, then, and that's what the Greeks did. They said if we can get Samaras into a position to go at people because he was their talisman, then Karagounis in the middle of 37 years of age.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. There's a lot of things, as you said there, Pete, though, that need to fall into place. And although we are taking confidence out of the likes of Costa Rica and all really going for it with no fear and just playing, it's almost like the players have never really played for clubs that have had tactics rammed down their throats. They've just been allowed play like kids on a field enjoying their football kind of thing, and that's a reason why they've gotten so well. And they, in fairness, they have been organised at the same time. But one of the questions that has been raised in Ireland from watching the World Cup is about the players coming through and us not producing the players. You mentioned Robbie Brady earlier, Pete, and as far as I know, he's the first player he's coming through the generation of the FAI's emerging talent program, which is great to see. It's great to see somebody find their resources come to life. But we probably need a few more players coming through on that regard.
Yeah, I think it's there's dozens of brilliant young players coming through. There's no doubt about it. It's just the step up from, say, like from playing at under 16 international level, stepping up. Once they've come through that under 16 international level, you're looking at professional clubs then. So
that's where they fall down. Is that what you're saying?
That's where they fall down, I think. I mean, it's how do you develop them? Are they getting bad habits when the clubs they go to, that type of thing? And also given that, if you have a really good international under 16 team, you get two of them into your senior team. That's probably a good international average. It's really good. But I see lots of good young players coming through, guys who can step up. They need to get into the proper environment. Maybe after England's dismal failure out here, that there might be some recognition or maybe the FA in England will go back to the clubs and say, you know, by the way, you know, you are in England, you are playing in a British league or whatever, and by the behaviour of the Premier clubs, they're destroying English football. Piece by piece, it's being dismantled. They're not going to be a world force again for a generation and a half. And if the Premier League continues to be 70% foreign players, that's going to get worse.
Well, I interviewed one of the heads of futsal in the UK this week, and he made the point that there was serious concerns because of the type of players that, say, England. It was a problem in England that they were having. You know, they're not producing players that can think for themselves. They've got the typical fast, strong, powerful, and a little bit skillful type players, but not the players that are very good at decision making. And I know over here in Ireland, that's something that the FAI are really trying to develop. You know, they're trying to get players thinking for themselves and that. And but as you said, the 16, you know, from 16-year-old after that, it's, you know, it's like almost, it's a crucial time for the players. And I remember the Irish under-16s team, they defeated Belgium 2-0 in a match about a year or two ago. And then within the space of 6 months, two of those players on that Belgium team were being touted for 10 million plus. Do you know what I mean? I think they had come through the Anderlecht academies or that. So is it fair to say that, you know, the fact that our next door neighbours are, it's our first port of call, and that's why we're it's almost like we're producing players like the English players, only to a lesser extent.
Yeah, I think we can legislate for ourselves to a certain amount. I was at a talk the other night given by Rube Doctor, who's the new high performance guy. And he was very, very forthright in his views, and it's going to upset a lot of guys in soccer in this country, and he's right. And the more he upsets the guys, the better. I've been involved in coaching like for a long, long time, and he was saying, look, who cares who wins 12 league in your area? It doesn't matter. You're developing the players to be the best they can be. And that's really important. And that's what killed English football for years. What you have is guys coaching teams and they only want to win. They want to win leagues at under 12 and under 13. And they want to play 11 aside doing it, which is also madness. And he said, but the players are not learning how to play. And I think it's so important that they've got to go and say, like, whether I'm in Galway here or wherever else you are, we're not going to have an under 11 aside at under 12.
Absolutely.
We're not going to have an Irish Cup 11 aside under 12. And we're going to scrap it. And the guy's going to say, oh, well, we'll pull out. Pull out the hell out of it. You know, let's go and play football and develop these great players. And if we produce a lot of the players, the decision makers, Dave, that you were talking about there, at under 16, and we get one of these guys over, and professional club will sign him and say, well, to get the best out of this guy, we're going to change our style a bit. And let the great young player be the influencer on the team, as opposed to being just, you know, a small cog in a big wheel. You know, let them change the wheel to suit the cog, I think, you know.
You can't imagine Pirlo being, when he was coming up through the ranks, him being shouted at, demanding orders. Do you know what I mean? He would have never developed that crucial role that he has with Italy and his clubs, you know, have been able to dictate a game, and he'll decide what way the game is going to be played. You know, you can't imagine him being, you know, full of tactics rammed down his throat.
Yeah. And also, you know, when that 14 or 15 year old Rude spoke the other night about Ian Robin when he was 14 years of age and said he always wanted to be stepping up to the next level, which is really, really important, you know. So when he was 14 and a half, he wanted to be playing in the under 16 team. So he was by a long way the best player in the under 14. When he played for the under 16s, he wasn't. So he had to, you know, amend his style, you know, but he learned so much by doing that, you know. So we've got to be prepared to push guys on. Guys have got to have that, you know, that philosophy in clubs that, you know, if I've got this under 14 team that has three great players in it, which means we're going to walk all over everybody in the under 14 league, put those three players up to play under 16 or under 15, and let's sacrifice winning the under 14 league, because as Ruth, who cares who won the under 14 league or who remembers who won it, but those three players will make so much progress
playing at a higher level.
Playing at a higher level, faster, stronger, fitter, that type of thing.
Yeah, because wasn't that the whole key point of the Emerging Talent Programme? They take the most talented, naturally talented kids away from their clubs quite often, and then they train them with proper coaches at a higher level, and they're playing games that are more, more, we'll say, demanding, but also demands a lot more thinking as well. And it seems to be working, Pete.
It is working, and it was, when it was started off, it was started off as essentially an under 14 thing, and now they're realizing it should be, they can have a certain amount of it at 14s, it's coming down to under 11. So you have the 11-year-olds now going to the emerging talent, and it's about to get them into a style of play, pass and move, all that type of stuff that says, this is how you should, play the game, look to pass it, keep the ball, be comfortable on the ball. Don't have some lunatic on the sideline screaming at you to lump it as far as you possibly can when you get it. And that's the important thing, increase their self-confidence and make them better players. It's still no guarantee you're going to get anything, but if you don't put in the work, you're guaranteed you won't get anything at all.
And just before I let you go, Pete,
sure.
Do you think the kids have been watching the World Cup and watching the Barcelona and the Spanish teams over the years,
Absolutely.
Thinking this is the right way to play?
Oh, they've always done that. I mean, the kids, if you just give... a ball to a kid at 8 years of age or 6 years of age, the first thing they want to do is run with it and never give it back. The first piece of development you see is at 8 to 9s, when they're looking, the smarter guys are looking to pass it. And they'll do it automatically. It's often, the thick lugs, I'd like to call them, on the sideline, who hasn't a clue and it just roars and shouts. And that's what's killing some kids. So we've got to rise above that. The FAI, through Rude Doctor, are doing absolutely the right thing. He's a very impressive guy. And but there are a few dinosaurs out there, and they're going to have to see them off.
Finally, Pete, it's been a fascinating conversation. Your prediction for the World Cup, obviously Brazil, this week we have Brazil taking on Germany and Argentina are going to be taking on the Dutch.
Yeah.
How do you see it?
Well, you asked me that, sorry, Dave, for cutting across you. You asked me that question on the Why Big Show a few weeks before the World Cup started. I said I tipped Brazil to win it, but I also said my caveat was the team that beats the Germans will win it.
Right.
Always, every tournament, and now they've got to play each other in the semi-final. I have to say the Germans are looking a lot more impressive than the Brazilians, but I have this kind of, my heart says I would love to see Brazil win it at home. My head says that I think the Germans are showing that they're the best equipped team to win it overall.
Yeah, so you're not giving anything to the teams from the other side of the semi-final?
I don't think either. And they've been fantastic, don't get me wrong. But if you go bet against the Germans, you'll nearly always regret it.
You will indeed. I think that goes for not just football, but politics as well.
Everything, yeah.
Pete Kelly, thanks a million for this intriguing conversation. I hope to chat to you again very soon.
Cheers.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show here. We're going to take a break and we're going to have our League of Ireland Go-Mouth section next.
Get with the times! We're online and we're in your pocket. Just search for FRQ.fm and boom! There we are. Simples.
I'm going to be talking to Goal Ireland's Peter Staunton shortly, but first I want to bring you some of the main news that was gripping League of Ireland circles this week. John O'Flynn has made his long-awaited return to League of Ireland football, signing for Cork City. I'm delighted to have him here on the League of Ireland Goalmouth Show. John, first things first, welcome back to the League of Ireland. It's exciting for, no doubt, Cork City fans, but for yourself as well, kind of going back to where it all began, and I'd say you're thrilled.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's the club that I grew up playing with. It's great to come back, and it's probably a good time to come back as well. The team is flying. There's a buzz back in the city, and just really looking forward to getting going now and getting playing.
Indeed, it was a 6-year hiatus from the league. And what was it, John, that made you want to return to Ireland and re-sign for Cork City?
It was the manager, really. He made me feel like Cork was the only place for me. I left England in May to come back home for the summer, and left most of my stuff in storage over there. All my football boots are there. So, it wasn't like I was coming back to sign for Cork City, but, after the couple of chats I had with John Caulfield, then, he kind of got the buzz going in me, and I went to a few matches, and the buzz is back in the city as well. And, he has the lads well drilled, and, he's a good taskmaster. So, I'm looking forward to working under him, and good bunch of lads. Like the times I was here, we had a good kind of Cork core.
Yeah.
That seems to be here again. It's all looking good for the club. Durham had a good shout, still in the cup. So, could be a good season.
And that Cork core that you talk about, John, I mean, one of the things that John Caulfield has brought is that he's been giving a lot of young players the chance, and young local players coming through, and there's almost like a full football regeneration thing going on in Cork. We've seen the terrific work that's going on with the universities and that, and you know, it's gone about it the right way, and no doubt you've been kind of following that over the years of the re-emergence of the great club.
Yeah, definitely, as you said, the young lads coming through. You know, through the years, we've always had a good under 19 squad, and you know, they've always seemed to be winning something, a cup or a league or something. So it's great to actually see them players come through. And you know, I've only trained Monday, Tuesday. We were off Wednesday, and I trained this morning. But even in, you know, the short spell, I could tell the quality from the young lads. And you know, as a kind of older pro now, coming back in, you know, it's up to me to show good habits and lead by example. And you know, I'm in no doubt that some of the young players, I can learn a bit off of them as well, because you know, it's a different kettle of fish now for me.
It's certainly
from the previous time I was here, you know. So
yeah,
you know, things are looking good for Cork City as a whole.
A different kettle of fish, as you said. It's a lot of things have changed. But having said that, I know you'll be able to comment more in depth once you've had a real taste of the action once again. But do you think much has changed in the League of Ireland since your previous spell with Cork City? No doubt, you've, as you said, you've been keeping tabs on the league.
Yeah, definitely. I think since I left in 2008, compared to now, I've probably come back in at a good time. It's hard for me to judge at the minute, but you know, the stories I have heard, the club has been through the mill, and they were probably, you know, not far off going into, you know, being no club at all. So
absolutely, yeah.
It's hard, as you say, it's hard for me to kind of show an opinion there, and you know, I haven't played a game yet, so the standard wise, and but like I've watched a few games since I've been back. I watched 4 games, I think, and you know, there has been some good quality, and you know, Cork are showing, you know, great potential, and as I said before, with the young lads, you know, things are looking bright.
And the crowd at Turner's Cross, John, I mean, we've seen, I think they're setting new records this year for the attendances and the atmosphere, and everybody loves going down to, even opposing players just love to be in this cauldron type atmosphere that seems to be really back in the city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as I said, the buzz is definitely back. You know, in the good old days when we were playing, that kind of buzz is back. And you know, as an opposition player, as you say, coming down, it's good to play in. You know, it's a carnival atmosphere, and you know, I think a lot of that is down to John Caulfield. You know, a lot of people respect him. A lot of people wanted to come out and see what kind of team he'd assemble, and he's really going about it the right way, and you know, the crowd has responded in kind.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff indeed. Now, we see St. Pat's, Derry City, Sligo and Dundalk, they're all in European action this season. The Irish clubs didn't do too well last season, but do you think that maybe Irish clubs can compete in Europe? You know, the likes of Pat's, Derry City and Cork, they've had decent runs, and you know, Shamrock Rovers have made history in 2011. Do you think this can be replicated, John?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I remember that Shamrock Rovers run. I was in England watching it at the time. You know, that was fantastic for them. And, you know, the likes of players who are coming back now, like Keith Fahey. So, just, you know, there's obviously big names coming back, and it's going to make the league bigger and stronger. And, you know, it just depends who you draw, really, in Europe. But I remember being at Cork, and some of the best memories I have were European trips and European games. So I'm thinking as well, it's essential for, you know, young lads coming through that they get that experience as well. So, you know, finishing in the top three and, you know, winning a cup is, you know, big on our agenda for next season, and getting the young lads that experience in Europe, because, you know, you don't really get it elsewhere. Like in the UK, it's tough if you're not playing at the highest level. So, you know, for us, it's a godsend, really. So,
yeah.
You know, hopefully Dundalk had a good result. That makes it look good for us in the league as well. The Irish League gets more sculpture and that. So, you know, it's all good, really.
Yeah, and exposure to a different type of football as well for the teams. Looking back at your time in England, John, what would you say you've learned while playing for the likes of Exeter and Barnet? How did life compare to that of the career of a League of Ireland footballer? Obviously, there's a lot more interest because England's such a bigger place and there's a much bigger population. Did you find that more people kind of knew you when you were at those clubs?
Yeah, it's totally different. Like, you know, I'm a Cove lad, so I'm literally training 10 minutes up the road. It's my local team. My family and friends are around me. So just leaving, going back to the UK was, you know, I was me getting out of my comfort zone, adapting to different things. So, you know, as you get out of your comfort zone and you do adapt, then you learn more things and you know, you're open to more experiences. So I've definitely come back a better player, a more kind of well-rounded player, and, you know, really enjoyed my spell with Barnet and Exeter, respectively.
We've seen young Brian Lenehan. He's been linked with a move to Arsenal after impressing for Cork. And, you know, for yourself, having earned a move to Britain after playing in the League of Ireland, how do you think playing League of Ireland football prepares young footballers for the move abroad? For example, when Seamus Coleman went over to Everton, he spent that extra season at Sligo Rovers, and he made the point that the extra season really helped him out in terms of hitting the ground running.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a case of, you know, some lads are going across maybe too early, and, you know, to get that experience, and the big clubs have to send them lads out on loan to lower division teams in England to get that experience. But I think when you're playing over here, it is a man's game, so you're getting that experience at a really early age, probably earlier than you would get in England unless you're a really exceptional player. So, you know, what I'd say to the likes of Brian, who is getting good exposure, is, you know, to keep his head down and to keep doing what's got the people who are interested coming over to watch him, and, you know, keep doing his bit for Cork City. And, you know, a move like that will kind of look after itself. But, you know, he's one of the standout players now since I've been back. So, you know, things are looking good that way for the club as well, like, you know.
I suppose, John, in terms of from the sports science side of things, it's improved so much over here now that maybe it's probably fair to say that a young player travelling over, having played a good few seasons at senior football in the League of Ireland, there won't be that huge gap that there was when maybe you first moved over.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think since John Caulfield's come in, the lads are training every morning now instead of evening time, I think it was last year. So even that in itself, you know, you're up in the morning, the first thing you're thinking about is football. So that kind of gets in the professional kind of mindset. So they're going over and it's like they've just moved from Cork and it's doing the same thing. Obviously, the level's changed, the players around them have changed. But as you say, it's a good experience over here. And, you know, the learning curve wouldn't be as vast as it was, you know, in my day maybe.
Indeed. Just before I let you go, John, I have to ask you, no doubt you've been keeping an eye on the World Cup. What do you make of the competition so far, and who is your tip to win the trophy?
Fantastic competition, and I think, you know, it's just one of them years that I can't call a winner, you know. I thought Spain would be very strong. They got trounced. I thought England might actually step up to the plate, and, you know, it's been so good and so many shocks and, you know, attacking football. Why, even the US the other night, you know, it was a shame in the end that they lost it, because I thought there was only one team going to win when they got that goal to go 2-1. So I think Argentina look very strong. I don't think they've hit peak at the minute. So, you know, if they do, they're really top heavy, and their lads up front will probably do the business. So, you know, I'm tipping Argentina.
We'll see what happens there, although Belgium will have something to say about that. Listen, John, thanks a million for joining us on the League of Ireland Gomout Show. Best of luck in your return to Cork City. I know the Cork City faithful will be delighted to have you, and hopefully we'll see a few goals and some good performances.
Lovely. Thanks a lot, Dave. Anytime, bye.
Yes, some great stuff there from John O'Flynn, Cork City's boy who's back in town. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by Goal Ireland's Peter Staunton. Peter, it's always an exciting time of the year for the League of Ireland clubs, and there was wins for Dundalk and Derry and an away draw for Sligo in Europe. Already a much better season, it's probably fair to say, than last year, but how far do you think these League of Ireland teams can go?
Absolutely, Dave. It's been a fantastic week for League of Ireland clubs in Europe. You know, even though it was only Luxembourg opposition for Dundalk in Unisesh, to come away from anywhere in Europe with a 2-0 scoreline is a phenomenal achievement. And out of all the Irish clubs in Europe this season, you know, I would expect Dundalk to put up most of a fight. Derry against Aberystwyth, again, great result, 4-0. Job is only half done, of course, but you would expect both of those sides to cruise through to the next stage of the competition. I'd worry a little bit more about Sligo. Obviously, they went away and got a nil-all draw in Bangor.
Yeah, John Coleman was quite disappointed with that, Peter.
Well, you would be. That's the problem, is that, you know, it's very precarious, because obviously any goal that is scored in the showgrounds now by the Lithuanians is worth double, and it means that Sligo might have to come out and play. And the problem with Sligo, I think, is that for whatever reason, they just can't translate that domestic form and that sort of superiority that they have. They've always been one of the bigger teams in Ireland, but they've only ever won one tie in Europe, and that was in 1994. So I just don't think that Sligo have the pedigree this year. I think the squad was a little bit unbalanced at the start of the season. Obviously, they've lost Ian Barraclough. John Coleman's come in to steady the ship, you know, and they got off to a winning start last weekend, but that was against a team that was in crisis themselves. I do fear a little bit for Sligo. The big problem, of course, for the Irish clubs is what's coming next. The draw in the Europa League is already made. So even if Sligo do get through, they're overwhelmingly likely to face off against Rosenborg. And, given that they were put out by Norwegian opposition last year quite comfortably, it was Molde, I wouldn't anticipate too many problems for Rosenborg in that one, even if two Sligo go through. And Dundalk then, of course, they've got a fearsome opposition in the next round. They've got Hajduk Split, which will be, for Stephen Kenny, it will be a useful measuring stick for how far his side have come. Because personally speaking, I think Dundalk have probably the best team in the league, the best squad in the league. They've recovered really well from their financial problems, and they've assembled some of the outstanding young talents in the league, led, of course, by Richie Towell.
It was great to see him do well in Europe. In fact, you know, that's one thing we always seem to say, Peter, when the big players in the League of Ireland can actually do it in Europe, it's so refreshing.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt in my mind that Richie Towell can play in the Premier League in England. Obviously, Stephen Kenny after the game praised his mentality, and you do get the sense that Towell was the one player in the Dundalk lineup who could rise above it and handle the expectations of what's expected from a team in Europe a little bit better than the rest. Obviously, his Champions League experience with Celtic, although he mightn't have got on the field, but he's still been in and around squads who've competed in the Champions League, and that sort of experience is very valuable. And who knows, if he does put in a good performance against Hajduk in the next round, he could be picked up, and that would be a positive development. Obviously, Dundalk would miss him as the season goes through, but a little bit of money would offset a little bit more financial worry, and it would continue to show that players are capable of going from this league abroad and making it on the bigger stage. Because there's no doubt in my mind, within the next 18 months to 2 years, Richie Towell will be a regular in the Premier League and in the Ireland team too.
And no doubt, Peter, you mentioned players there that can bring the league to another level and bring the Irish teams to another level. And certainly we've been talking about Brian Lenihan being linked with Arsenal. A huge coup if that can happen. Some people have dubbed him, Peter, as the next Seamus Coleman. But is that a little bit difficult, and it puts a lot more pressure on the lad?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be one to put pressure on him. Obviously, anyone that is at the age of 20 moving from the League of Ireland to a Premier League team, he's not going to be competing, say, with Carl Jenkinson and whoever they buy to replace Bakary Sagna for a right back slot. He's going to go into the reserve side, and he's going to have to build up his physique. He's going to have to build up his fitness. He's going to have to build up just basically his game IQ, because he'd be playing what is professional football in a situation he's not entirely used to. So all they see at that stage is what Arsenal would see in him is no different than what they would see in a 14, 15-year-old up and down England and up and down Europe. It means that they see the potential there for a player to develop. So even if he does go across, he's going to be a long, long way from the first team picture. But that was the same with Coleman. He transferred, I think, in 2009. He had a quick run of games not long after he joined. But it did take him a while to establish himself. And Seamus is now, 25, 26 years of age. And he's relatively still inexperienced for his age, you would say. He's probably about the same age as Lionel Messi, for example. So it does take boys a little bit longer from the Irish League, to go across and establish themselves. The Seamus Coleman tag, I think, is one that's probably been attached to him by the British media, just because they see another, ostensibly another right back coming over for Ireland for a cheap price. So obviously the nearest reference point they have is Seamus Coleman. But, he's probably a bit more of an accomplished footballer than Coleman was at his age. He's a versatile player. He's featured already at right back. He's got no problem playing at left back. He's even slotted in into the midfield and played on the wings, So, what we do see is he's another example of what John Caulfield has done is to get the local guys playing well into the first team. And there's no doubt about it, they've got the nucleus of a great team there. And if they do lose a player here and there, it's a development. In that sense, it's a development league. They do need to sell players out in order to sustain the clubs, should I say. So it would be a loss to Cork to lose him so early in his career, but it really is the natural way of things. You don't want to hold guys back either. And if they do have the talent to go across, and they do have the application once they get there, then you know, it's a win-win situation for everybody. They get their money, the player gets his move.
They do indeed, Peter, and hopefully we'll start seeing proper money being put on the table for these talented players in the League of Ireland. Just before I let you go, we mentioned Brian Lennon. We have to talk about Cork because they've brought in reinforcements. Obviously, John O'Flynn, who we've had earlier on the show, coming in, and Killian Morrison. Certainly a chance now for them to challenge. They're in second position, 1 point off the lead with a game in hand. This is a serious boost for John Caulfield in Cork.
Yeah, it is a big boost. You know, there was probably doubts over Marcus Sullivan at the start of the season, whether he could grab the goals. But even as we saw last week against Limerick, you know, he's got no problem sticking them in at this level. So, you know, that's kind of one area of the field that they thought they would probably have problems in at the start of the season, especially, you know, with Eldings so badly out of condition, and he's obviously departed too. So to fortify that area of the field with better numbers, you know, is always going to be a boost. And especially somebody like John O'Flynn, who knows the league so well, but knows the club so well, you know, he is a League of Ireland winner, of course, and a cup winner too. So, you know, the people of Cork have fond memories of John O'Flynn, and you know, he's been in England for what I think maybe 5 or 6 years, and he has scored goals, maybe not playing at the highest level. By the time he moved back, he was playing with Exeter City. But, you know, I think it's a positive move, and certainly I think he'll chip in with a few important goals. Then I suppose at the other end of the development curve, you've got Killian Morrison, signed from UCD, maybe not as among the goals as some of the other goal scorers around the League of Ireland this season, but you know, it is tough to get your chances at UCD sometimes because they do tend to tread the water a little bit at the other end of the table. But he looks a very accomplished player. He's got very clever movement coming in behind, and you know, he's an adept finisher too. And it might be a similar situation where, you know, they obviously got Kieran Kilduff on loan last season. That really put him into a rich vein of form that continued with Shamrock Rovers into this season. So perhaps, you know, they've got him signed, I think, for the half of this season remaining, plus all the way through next season. So hopefully he can hit the ground running, get a few goals, and Cork can spread the goals around. Because if you look at the league table and certainly the goal difference column, it's one area where they've been struggling, say, to keep pace with Pats. And with Dundalk, is that goals for column? You know, they're 10 behind St. Pat's, 31-41, and they're 13 behind Dundalk, 31-44. So it could be the difference in close games is somebody who can put the ball in the net, because keeping clean sheets is no problem. They've only conceded 13 all season. So as long as they can get everything addressed at the other end and maybe make things a little bit more comfortable in an attacking sense, which O'Flynn and Morrison can do, then I think they will sustain their challenge till the end of the season.
That was Peter Staunton of Goal Ireland there on the Why Big Football Show. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here. My thanks to all our guests for joining us this week. We'll do it all again next week. Thanks a million. Enjoy the World Cup final. Have a great sporting week, and we'll chat to you soon.
Get with the times. We're online and we're in your pocket. Just search for FRQ.FM and boom! There we are. Simples.
Uh-huh. Sticky eggs. They got one more problem with you, girl. Hey.
Ziggy Eggs. What you got? Smart money, betting I'll be better off without you. In no time, I'll be forgetting all about you. You're saying that you know, but I really, really doubt you. Understand, my life is easy when I ain't around you. Iggy, Iggy, too biggie to be his present. I'm thinking I love the thought of you more than I love your presence. And the best thing now is probably for you to exit. I let you go, let you back. I finally learned my lesson. No half stepping either, you want it or you just playing. I'm listening to you knowing I can't believe what you're saying. It's a million you, baby boy, so don't be dumb. I got 99 problems, but you won't be one. Like what?
Something that can wash out the pain. And I'm lost, I'm sleeping all these demons away. But your ghost, the ghost of you, it keeps me awake. My friends, had you figured out? Yeah, there's so much inside of you. You tried hiding another you, but your evil was coming through. These eyes sitting on the wall, well, they watch every move I make. Bright light living in the shade. Your cold heart makes the spirit shake. Ooh. I had to go through hell to prove I'm not insane. Had to meet the devil just to know his name. And that's when my love was burning. Yeah, it's still burning. I keep going to the river to pray, cause I need something that can wash out the pain. And I I'm sleeping all these demons away. But your ghost, the ghost of you, it keeps me away. I keep going to the river to pray, cause I need something that can wash out the pain. And I'm sleeping all these demons away. But your ghost, the ghost of you, it keeps me away. Each time that I think you go, I turn around and you're creeping in. And I let you under my skin, cause I love living in the sin.
everybody else doing, just cause everybody doing what they all do. If one thing I know, I fall but I grow. I'm walking down this road of mine, this road that I go home. So am I wrong for thinking that we could be something for real? Now am I wrong for trying to reach the things that I can't see? That's just how trying to reach the things that I can't see, but that's just